The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
Good morning, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas at large, and Texas. And the nation and the world listening online. This is the Mark Davis Show. Scott Braddock here with, of all people on the line, Mark Davis, who is checking in from his house. And I assume he's at home. I guess he doesn't have to be as long as he's not around other people. But Mark, how are you feeling, sir?
That's question number one. Feeling wonderful. And thank you so much. Appreciate it a lot. Mm-hmm. Here's how the process goes. And let me once again thank you. As I did at 7:05 yesterday, as I will do at 9:05 tomorrow.
I look forward to it.
Spreading the love throughout the broadcast day to remind people that I do still exist. And although I will tell you that existence itself has a warped and strange meaning. When you come off the weird suspended animation of the holidays anyway, after Christmas is finished, and we got a spectacular Christmas done before everybody in the house tested, except Ethan. Ethan remains invincible. God bless him, and I just hope that stays the same. Lisa's had a slightly tougher ride than I have, but compared to other people, and we've had sort of the textbook manageable symptoms that just feel like a cold, and everything's fine. And what Salem's plan is they as a company have remained on the 10-day standard, and my 10th day of post-symptoms would be tomorrow. So that would provide for the Friday return. So fingers are crossed for that. So everybody's doing fine, doing great, and just ready to plug into whatever you're doing and whatever you're up to. I got a couple of things, but you go first.
Well, one thing I was going to ask you about, it touches on something you said, which is here's the company saying they're staying with the 10-day plan. And you see all of this revised guidance on different things coming from the CDC. And this has been the case throughout the pandemic. The public health experts who, I get it, that they're trying to work through an issue. As you said yesterday, you said a version of this, that we keep learning new things about this. And so, of course, you know, the advice about it's going to change as you learn new things. That's the way your brain is supposed to work, I think. But when it comes to what they're telling us about what we're supposed to do if we test positive, because they keep changing things, it makes things so confusing, Mark, and people are really frustrated to the point where overnight, I was listening to the report this morning, the CDC said, well, you know, we're just sort of going to quietly reiterate what we said before. There's so much confusion surrounding this. And at this point, people expect something that is approaching reliable info.
Well, they are, and a couple of you phrased it perfectly, a couple of narratives and about that. The greatest wisdom in the almost 2 years that we've had to wrestle with this has been for individuals and for officials and institutions to know what we do not know. It has been a learning process. We've had to figure out what we thought about the disease, what we thought about what made smart policy, and those things have changed. And then now, state by state, we see things, as will happen in a federal system like America. We see that states have different policies. It's that Texas runs things different than New York, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in the case, there's one thing that my personal situation has really given me some clarity on.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the notion that everybody is different. I know people, and I'm listening right now, I guarantee you there are people who are listening who themselves or they know of people who went through a quick COVID course, pretty uneventful, and they were better in like 3 or 4 days.
Yes.
I also know some people who've been wrestling with it for 2 or 3 weeks.
Same.
When I was talking to Salem HR right after getting diagnosed, I asked them, hey, because all I want to do is come back and do shows. All I want to do is come back and do shows. And I said, guys, Biden himself, the CDC, not Biden, but the CDC itself is talking about rolling back from 10 days to 5 days. So wink, wink, nudge, nudge. are we going to do that 5-day thing?
Yeah.
And the word came back pretty quickly. Nah, we're gonna stay with the 10. And which, by the way, has worked out about perfectly for me. Tomorrow's day 10, and I think that greases the wheel pretty perfectly. But how about taking things on a case-by-case basis? The way the universe used to work is when you were sick, you stayed home. When you were well, you came back. Is make everybody be fever-free, symptom-free for like a full day at home, and then you get to come back, whether that is day 5, day 7, day 12. It is these pronouncements, these declarations from the mouth that get people in trouble. And because what happened even before I left was that the notion of 5 days really chafed a lot of people in the healthcare industry and some of the airlines.
Yeah, absolutely.
5 days, people are going to be pressured to come back to work while they're still sick. Well, that should never, ever happen. And the 10-day thing said that they're going to be people who are better and are going to be just languishing at home for 5 days. How about taking everybody on a case-by-case basis? Is that so hard?
You know, it shouldn't be that hard. I mean, and I can see it's a complex deal, right? There's a lot of nuance there. You have, on the one hand, you would want to have some sort of a standard, right? But at the same time, you could say, hey, Mark's good to go. Bring him on in. I have friends who, as you mentioned, may have been dealing with this for weeks. I was talking to one in particular yesterday who said that he was feeling a lot better. And then about a week in, it just attacked him again. And he's feeling terrible once again. And so he might have actually gone back to where he works if not for the fact that there was some guidance out there.
Yep, exactly right. So here we all are. And I don't want to beat everybody to death with COVID news, but when I return, I will have a few things. I have no fundamental change in policy in my head. I don't view it any differently at all. And in fact, as we sort of summed up yesterday, if it seems that this Omicron adventure it involves a strain of COVID that is way more transmissible, that will poke through the vaccine with far greater regularity, but in so doing, give you a case that is way less severe, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to the hospital. And is that a trade-off I'm willing to make?
Mm-hmm.
My answer is every day. And it doesn't mean I'm going to grow cavalier about giving it to other people or grow unsupportive of the vaccines. It didn't keep me from getting it. It's not going to keep you from getting it. Chances are it may be of some help. I don't know. Again, know what we don't know. But there's plenty of indication that my symptoms, Lisa's symptoms, my sister-in-law, her fiance, who we're just putting back on a plane to the Cayman Islands. And it's funny that another talk show topic in a minute. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is that our symptoms were all vaxxed and boosted, and our symptoms were better as a result. Do I know that? Like I know my own name, or like 2 + 2 = 4? Nope. But there's plenty of ample reason to believe it. Now, interesting thing. If I'm getting on a plane into Nashville or New York or something like that, I don't have to be tested. Some countries are requiring that you are. The Cayman Islands is one of them. So they were not able to get out of my house and to the airport,
right,
and back to their country of residence,
yeah,
until they had a positive test. So talk show topic number one, good luck finding a test. They are nowhere to be found. There's a wonderful place down the road that'll give you a nice antigen test for $99 if you got that. So testing, and then we get to the notion of, in American workplaces, testing is pretty well not the standard, and it doesn't seem that it should be, because I can apparently test positive for three. I can test positive until Easter with this stupid thing and be symptom free and back at work and everything's fine. So it's it's a lot of moving parts.
Mark, I have monitored your Twitter over the last 24 hours, and you tell me if I'm close. Grade my paper. Seems like you're a little antsy to comment on more things than normal. Is that right? I could be wrong.
I tell you what it is. If it's true that if the pie is sliced in a certain way,
yeah,
that in a normal existence, I have a 3-hour show every morning, and then the rest of the day to throw stuff up on mm-hmm. social media. It is true that pie is now sliced in a different way, with my only talk show exposure being these cherished moments with you yesterday, today, well, and tomorrow.
Let me.
That does leave a whole lot more opportunity. So,
yeah.
I have had some interesting interesting opportunities to examine some things, including monitoring the stuff that you have done. Can we do a couple of things in quick order? How did your chat with our buddy Don Huffines go?
I thought that it was a fascinating conversation. I think you and I agree on this, that you have a governor who 4 years ago had such solid support throughout the Republican Party, and throughout, you know, his career, that's been the case, really hasn't had to deal with primary challenges. Now he's taking heat from people who probably would have been shoulder to shoulder with him, you know, even 2-3 years ago. Then, of course, COVID happens and the border, you know, becomes an issue that has always been there, you know, in the Republican primary, but one that he's having to deal with because he's being attacked on it from both the left and right. And then there are headlines this morning about, you know, the fact that you have Democrats and Republicans going after Abbott on the treatment of our soldiers who are on the border and that sort of thing. And Huffines basically saying, look, I'm putting out things on my website and you have Abbott just he's copy pasting things from my site and making those his priorities as governor.
It's superb analysis. And when I return to offering such analysis on an everyday basis in the now just a few short weeks to the March 1st primary, the question remains the same for Abbott, for Paxton, for any members of Congress that get primaried. And that is not, are the people running against the incumbent doing a good job in their campaign? Mm-hmm. There is no doubt that Huffines has run a smart, ballsy, you can say that on radio, campaign that has resonated with a lot of people. Alan West remains an iconic conservative rock star. But that's not the question. Neither of those is the question. The question is, will these gentlemen make a sufficient argument that Greg Abbott needs to be fired?
That is always the question when there's an incumbent.
That's
right.
Always the question. I mean, I always say when people go, oh, but Alan West is an icon, or oh, but the Huffines campaign has been so smartly run.
Right.
True and true. But I always say, ask Governor Kay Bailey Hutchison about that. the biggest rock star in Texas political history, the most popular, if you measure popularity by how many raw votes you get over a career, Kay Bailey Hutchison is the winner. Nobody else is close. And Rick Perry waxed her in the 2010 primaries because we didn't like Kay. No, it's because they didn't want to fire Rick Perry. Paxton may have a somewhat greater vulnerability, a little bit maybe, perchance. But in the George P. Bush, Ava Guzman, Louie Gohmert, I mean, these are three people that we all know in varying degrees. The question is not, do I love Louie? Is George P. a good dude? Is Ava Guzman running an interesting campaign? Yes, yes, and yes. But does the do 4 million people who voted for Paxton 4 years ago, do half of them, to keep him, you know, do half of them want to fire him? I have no evidence of that. So, you know, could that evidence arise in the coming, you know, 8-9 weeks? Sure. That's why we have talk shows. So in our remaining couple of minutes, do you want to do some Cruz Biden impeachment talk?
Well, yeah. So let me play this for you. This is from his podcast, Cruz's Verdict. And he loses me on part of this. And Mark, you know this about me. You follow along with what I do. You'd be hard pressed to find a politician in Texas I've not been critical of, at least now and then. Where he loses me is he says they should, or they, he doesn't say they should. He said they might in the House, if the Republicans take the majority, he said they might impeach Biden, whether it's justified or not. Listen.
I'll flip it around to Joe Biden. Do you think there's any chance that a Republican House would impeach President Biden?
Yeah, I do think there's a chance of that. And whether it's justified or not, as we talked about when Verdict launched, the Democrats weaponized impeachment. They used it for partisan purposes to go after Trump because they disagreed with him. And one of the real disadvantages of doing that, and this is something you and I talked about at great length, is the more you weaponize it and turn it into a partisan cudgel, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
So he goes on there, Mark, but what are your thoughts?
Well, that's not Cruz saying, I want this to happen.
Right.
That's Cruz saying the House might do that. I hope not. I am so impeachment weary. It is correct that Democrats turned impeachment into a political cudgel. They impeached Trump because there were things he was doing that they didn't like. I can spend the next 50 shows telling you things Biden is doing that I don't
like. I'm sure you could. You'll get right back to it. I know that.
And I will start on Friday. That is not where the impeachment bar has been set. That's not where I want it to be set. But if you're asking me, will, you know, under Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who I assume we're going to get after we retake the House in November of 22, will there be a groundswell of support to impeach Biden? There probably will. Yeah. I'm going to go right now, and prediction is a dangerous game, saying that we'll be so thrilled to be back in power and so busy figuring out what to do with it that the wiser path is going to be to let the Biden administration just hang on its own noose of bad policy.
We will see.
Mm-hmm. Give people an impeachment that I think virtually nobody wants to wallow through again.
Yeah, you're technically correct that he's not saying that he wants them to do that, right? He's saying that it's something they could do, but Cruz is a smart guy. There's a reason he's putting that out there. I'm just going to say that right. And then the other thing is, and this is what I've come to call it lately. This is my expert analysis. It's sort of nanana boo boo politics. It's like you did it, so now we're going to do it. Which is just I wish, when you say the more responsible way to go with wielding power would be to work on issues that actually impact people's lives. All these folks get caught up in the Washington game of who's up and who's down and who's winning this news cycle and who's losing this news cycle, and that's the kind of thing that this amounts to.
And I know because we got to scoot because I do retain some familiarity with the clock. What is the best definition of fighting back? If the Democrats take the low road in impeachment against Trump, is the best way to fight back to symmetrically do the exact same thing to Biden? I would say no. It is rather to and when I say take the high road, I don't mean be timid, be mild-mannered. I want to be aggressive, fight hard, fight smart, but do it on issues that people really care about. So, boom, I'm going to leave you alone and let you knock out the rest of the show. What say we have a conversation tomorrow at 9:05 and entertain those people and get me the heck back to work on Friday. Who's with me?
Sounds good to me. Mark Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it, Scott.
You can, of course, weigh in on anything we have said here. 866-660-5759. 866-660-5759. Great to hear Mark doing even better today. 825, 660 AM, the answer. Yesterday, we heard from Sid Miller, Texas Agriculture Commissioner, who is, of course, running for re-election. Coming up here at 8:35 or so, we will talk with Republican State Representative James White, who is running to oust Miller. We'll ask him about that on the way. Scott Bradekin for Mark Davis on 660 AM The Answer, where it is 8:31 and Gordon Griffin has the news. 8:37 here on the Mark Davis Show. Good morning. I'm Scott. Nice to meet you. If I haven't spoken to you before, some people are listening to this and hearing my voice for the very first time. Others are hearing my voice and saying, where is Mark? Because maybe they didn't hear him earlier this hour or yesterday. The news is out. He put it out on Twitter yesterday, or actually the night before, look, Mark Davis has COVID. He's doing fine. And he's going to check in again with us tomorrow at 9:05. But he's honoring this company's policy of, waiting for the full 10 days before coming back to the studio. And as I said to him in our conversation earlier, I can tell by following his social media, his Twitter feed, he's a little more active there right now. He's antsy to get to weigh in on these issues and talk to you. He can't wait to be back here at the Mark Davis microphone. It is my pleasure now to introduce someone who I've known for a few years now, State Representative James White, who is running for Texas Agriculture Commissioner, which I have to be honest, Chairman, when you announced for this, I was a little surprised by it because it's hard to imagine a house that you're not in.
Thank you so much.
You've been a fixture there. Yeah. I mean that. You've been, as chairman of the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee, which is an important committee. You do work on other committees. Used to seeing you there on the floor and, talking to you there and figuring out, what's going on day to day in our legislature.
Well, thank you so much for that, Scott. And we're very extremely proud to represent our constituents in rural East Texas and the Texas legislature. But let me tell you what I'm also proud of. I'm proud that I was able to serve my country honorably as a U.S. Army infantry officer under Ronald Reagan during the fall of the Berlin Wall. I served in the Berlin Brigade. I was able to come back, and I'm proud of being able to serve Texas students as an economics and government teacher, and I coach high school football and basketball. And I'm a small beef cattle producer. I own marketable timber, and as you stated, I've had six
terms in the Texas House. And last year, I served on President Trump's 2020 national campaign team, mm-hmm. Black Voices for Trump, where we informed minority voters about the achievements of the Trump administration. And that resulted in the president earning more minority support than any other Republican presidential candidate since 1960.
Well, you sound like a Renaissance man when you put it all that way. Let me lay out for you how I think about this interview, which is, even though you've done all of that, as a state representative, and you know this is just a reality, running statewide in Texas, to go from representing a district in rural East Texas and then say, okay, I'm going to put my hat in the ring for statewide office in a place that has nearly 30 million people across 254 counties and two time zones. Those things are almost nothing alike, right? Running a local race versus a statewide race is that you mentioned, working on President Trump's efforts. It's like running for president, right? I mean, the difference between running for state rep versus running for a statewide office. And so, tell me about your campaign so far. You're traveling around the state. What are you hearing from people as you introduce yourself?
Well, this is what we're focusing on. We're focusing on that we love Texas, we love our farmers and ranchers, and they deserve a commissioner that's going to promote and protect their industry and protect consumers in Texas. Look here, Scott, we need a proven conservative. Chairing the Homeland Security and Public Safety Committee, I passed constitutional carry this session. It's now law. I work with my fellow legislators. We tripled border security. We passed the heartbeat bill, and we banned critical race theory and got more integrity into our election. That's in contrast with the current incumbent that's doubled taxes and fees on ag producers. He's used these extra revenues to fund new agency positions in the top level, six-figure salaries, even to his consultant's wife. He saddled our entrepreneurs and farmers and ranchers with burdensome regulations. And now we're finding out that Sid Miller's campaign team has been meeting in the back alleys behind the Texas Department of Agriculture, taking bribes and swindles from poor farmers and ranchers and entrepreneurs that are trying to get their hemp business started. They're taking tens of thousands in envelopes and taking it right over into the office of the Texas Department of Agriculture, trying to buy access to hemp licenses. Now, let me tell you something, Scott. Those hemp licenses don't cost tens of thousands of dollars. And the reason I know that is because I co-authored the Texas hemp bill, and those licenses are not to exceed $100. So we have taxes, we have burdensome regulations, and we even have crony taxes by members of Sid Miller's campaign team.
Interesting. I asked Miller about that when he was on the show yesterday, about these accusations that you're talking about of basically folks, influence peddling, selling access to the office to be able to get these licenses. He brushed it off. You may have heard it. He said, look, I've been investigated. The people around me have been investigated. They never found anything about me. It's all made up, and it's just dirty campaigning. What do you say to that?
Well, this is what I say. The Texas Rangers, they're a storied and just a prominent law enforcement agency, not just throughout the state, but throughout this country and this world. It's all of this is out in the public record. Sid Miller's campaign consultant and his campaign, other campaign team member, have been arrested, and they were actually arrested for taking money from Texas farmers and entrepreneurs, tens of thousands of dollars for hemp licenses that are not supposed to be more than $100. And I heard a lot of what he said yesterday. Mm-hmm. I heard it, Scott. And let's talk about the successes of the Republican legislature this session.
Yeah, he was just to remind people, he was very critical of the legislature. In fact, you pointed to earlier in this interview, you talked about the election integrity bill. He said basically that it's terrible. He said that because it reduces penalties for illegal voting, that there should be more work on that front. He was very critical of y'all on the electricity grid. Wasn't really pulling any punches when it comes to what your work product was in the Texas House and in the Senate and things that were signed by the governor.
And Scott, we look forward to sitting down and contrasting our true conservative record, legislative record, with the sorry conservative legislative record of Sid Miller. And his first, let's contrast here. As chair of Homeland Security and Public Safety, I worked to triple border security funding to $3 billion for $800 million. In his first session in 2001, he voted to give in-state tuition, college cash, taxpayer cash to illegal immigrants. Let's continue with the contrast. My first session in 2011, when teams and swarms of grassroots conservatives were concerned about another Strauss term as speakership in 2011, as a freshman legislature, I voted against Strauss. This commissioner, when he was a legislator in the House, what he did, he voted for Speaker Strauss, gave a second of speech, actually got a committee chair, the same chair that I hold right now, Homeland Security and Public Safety, and he sat on important Second Amendment legislation, open carry, constitutional carry, and campus carry. So I will look forward to talking about contrasting our conservative record with the fake conservative record of Sid Miller.
When you have talked about these issues at some of the campaign events that you've been at around the state, what's the reaction from people, and do you hear concern from them about these, as you lay them out, problems with the incumbent?
Well, they're shocked and they're confounded, because he says one thing as a conservative of convenience, but then when we look at it, he's not a conservative of conscience. Okay, so they're absolutely shocked. Just think about this. In 2016 and 2017, when farmers and ranchers and entrepreneurs were facing the headwinds of horrible Chinese trade laws and policy, when they were facing biblical floods called Harvey, farmers and ranchers were suffering from record droughts. What this commissioner was doing was raising fees and taxes on them, and focus more on regulating barbecue establishments instead of getting in the trenches and helping these farmers and ranchers. This is a failed commissioner. This is a commissioner that has promoted a culture of cronyism over in that department, and he is not helping and he's not supporting these farmers and ranchers and the prosperity of Texas.
You mentioned that controversy over barbecue. It reminded me about the fight he was having with the Restaurant Association, who they had said that, look, there's no evidence, and people may remember this. He had accused barbecue places, when you go into the restaurant, when they weigh the meat and then charge you for it, that the scales were rigged, basically, right? And the Restaurant Association said, but that's just not true. There's no real complaints about this. Although I did hear from some people at the time who said that they sort of agreed with Miller on that, because they at least felt like they might be getting ripped off and that it was a consumer issue.
Well, let's get to the bottom of this. This commissioner, when he was elected as a conservative, he wanted to increase his budget by 50%. When the legislature, when the conservative legislature told him no, he went and found ways to raise his budget in order to fund these six-figure salaries for his friends, to fund these salaries. He raised fees and taxes, and then went out and fabricated other instances to raise fees on restaurant tours like barbecue places that you're talking about. Let me tell you how silly this is, okay? When you go into a steakhouse, you know, you look at the menu, it says what? 6-ounce steak fillet, okay? How are you going to bring out a weight scale in the middle of some of these big restaurants and do that?
Oh, right. Like, so you have to trust them, right, that it's 6 ounces. I got you.
Well, this is what I say. He picked on the people he thought he could get away with on this. So I joined the legislature. We passed legislation to ensure that he wouldn't do that. And guess what? He's a lawless commissioner, because even after we passed that legislation, he still tried to enforce that lawless rule. And I had to sign a letter, and the most conservative attorney general in the history of Texas, Ken Paxton, actually sent him a letter and said that if he did not stand down and stop burdening these barbecue establishments, he would lose in court.
Am I wrong in making this assessment that you are now shifting a little bit in this campaign to going on the attack? I have not heard you speak this way before.
Well, look, the people need to.
Or is it, or you know, in fairness, is it that it's really campaign time now? Because hey, now we're in the primary. Now it's 2022, and it's time to do this.
Well, all I know is the people need the information, and they need to get it into context. While we have a statewide Republican official trying to run down the election integrity bill, which has several enhancements, felony enhancements, for violating the integrity of our elections. When we have the a statewide Republican official trying to undermine our ban on critical race theory, this is serious, serious, bad stuff. And this commissioner, okay, this particular commissioner has raised taxes on farmers and ranchers while he's trying to say that we didn't energize, we didn't weatherize the grid. Well, actually, we did do that, and that is being done now, the weatherization of the grid. And in fact, I don't know what this guy is talking about, because if you go to where he hails from in north central Texas, they have more wind farms than you can ever see.
You're right.
They're even near his hometown. So I don't understand how he all of a sudden gets this newfound opposition to subsidizing so-called green energy.
Chairman James White, as fired up as I think I've ever heard you, I'm a little taken aback.
Well, let me tell
I'll be
you
honest,
because I'm taking this seriously.
Yeah.
I'm a small.
No, I'm not dismissing any of this. It's just I've never heard you this way.
Let me tell you what I'm really taking this personally. Because I am a small beef cattle producer. I look at these farmers and ranchers every day. I look at these barbecue restaurant owners every day. And I just think it's horrible that we have a Republican doing this to these people in the great state of Texas. Look, the political grandstanding is over. It's finished. The photo op sessions are over. We're going to get down to brass tacks. And I'll guarantee you this. And when I was in the military, when we had consistent issues, we had a day of stand down. The day that I'm elected, when I'm elected as a conservative agriculture commissioner, we will have a day of stand down with the executive staff, and we will relearn ethics and transparency. We'll start rolling back these onerous taxes on these producers. We're going to roll back and eliminate these burdensome regulations, and I guarantee you this, Scott, we will not have a culture where members of my campaign team are taking money in the back alleys from entrepreneurs and business owners trying to buy access into the Texas Department of Agriculture.
Chairman James White running for Texas Ag Commissioner. What's the website if people want to check you out?
JamesWhiteForTexas.com, JamesWhiteForTexas.com.
I am looking forward to covering this race. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We will talk soon. It's 8:53, Mark Davis Show. If you thought the primaries are going to be boring, you were way off with that. We're right back here on 660 AM. The Answer. I'm Scott Braddock in for Mark Davis. It's 8:59, the Mark Davis Show. Scott Braddock in for Mark, 660 AM. The Answer. 866-660-5759. The telephone number if you'd like to weigh in on anything we have said. I'll open up the lines. Anything I haven't said. Maybe you think I'm missing stuff. 866-660-5759. You remember at the beginning of the hour, Mark and I were talking about the dynamic that exists when there is an incumbent in office. The challengers have to make the case that the incumbent needs to be fired. I'm being honest here, and I've known James White for a long time, state rep running for ag commissioner against Sid Miller. He is starting to make his case for firing Commissioner Miller. That interview will be posted on the website later today at 660amtheanswer.com. Wow. He was fired up. And when I asked him, is this a new tone from you? Was basically the question. He said, look, I'm taking this seriously. And he's laying out accusations of corruption and mistreatment of farmers. And wow. What an interview. 866-660-5759, the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer. We're coming up on 9 o'clock.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.